Well, here we are, crew. Hope everybody's well. Hope everybody's having a fantastic week. This week's guest is Ms. Avril Bailey. Avril is an employment service officer specializing in connecting people with potential employers. Avril explains everything that you need to know about gaining or changing your employment status in 2023. Expect to learn the sought-after characteristics that employers are looking for in 2023, how to produce and structure a highly effective resume, how to make yourself more desirable in the employment market, how to become more confident leading into an interview, the options available to you as an employment seeker from a disadvantaged situation, and much, much more. Crew, it seems like separating yourself and standing out in the employment or career market is becoming incredibly difficult to do. This is why having the foundations of a solid cover letter, eye-catching resume, and effective interview skills have never been more important. Sometimes in life, we get employment or career opportunities without necessarily going through the hard yards or the hard craft of presenting a resume and even backing ourselves through an interview process. We all know someone, for example, perhaps even you yourself, was given an opportunity without going through these formal processes. However, as the job market tightens up and academic inflation and larger, more skillful pools of people to choose from become available, there will become a time where you will need to review your resume and possibly interview for a position you wish to obtain. So get your notebook out, listen, and write down the advice from someone connecting people with employers every single day. Please welcome Ms. Avril Bailey. Bailey, welcome to the show. How are you, miss?
Thanks for having me, Tim. I'm going well, thanks.
Awesome. You are an employment, service officer. What is that and what do you do with your time, please?
Yeah, sure. So I'm an employee service officer, basically an ESO for short. And essentially the role of an ESO is I interview job-ready candidates that are linked to Centrelink services. So I work for a provider. And either I market them at employers and businesses that might be recruiting, or otherwise business professionals will come to myself and ask for assistance. Therefore, I'll filter the job-ready people and hopefully find the right fit for their business.
Awesome. And how did you find yourself working in this space? Is this something you always wanted to do? Did you train to go into this role? How did you find yourself working as an employment service officer?
Yeah, sure. So it was a little bit bizarre how I got into the industry. So I've been in the industry for now 3 years. I have come from a very community-based background. So personal training prior, and prior to that was hospitality as well. I actually got to the role through a friend of a friend in the gym. I just wanted something a little bit more stable where I could help people fulfill their job requirements and change in lifestyle. They got me the job at my current provider.
Gotcha. So in 2022, is the nature of work, I feel like it's changed a fair bit since, I don't know, I was a teenager going for a job at the supermarket. I mean, it seems like young people today, and even those that are maybe not so young but that are looking to go into work, have this huge, you know, even more so variety of options than perhaps what you or I did growing up. Are the themes that employers are looking for still the same in 2022 as they were in the past? Like, you know, the good old-fashioned communication, I feel like that never changes. I feel like, you know, throughout history we have to be good communicators. Is there anything that you feel that is sort of cutting edge or, you know, a key theme in this year or as we move into 2023 that employers might be looking for?
We have found in the last 8 to 12 months that employers are having trouble getting job-ready candidates and really good candidates that are reliable, that communicate well and are hard workers. And that old school mentality just seems to be few and far between, which is a little bit unfortunate. We do find that employers are really looking for the right character trait. You can train the rest around what they require, but just finding that loyal, reliable good communication, good character trait. They want to be there.
It was interesting talking to a provider for apprenticeships a little bit earlier on in the year. I had a guy from, I think it might have been Fairbrothers or one of these institutions, come in and talk about what they're looking for in terms of getting young people into apprenticeships and construction. And one of the things he was saying was that the young guys and gals coming in today is that they just want to be like at the top, doing the best job straight away when they first get into the worksite. So these guys give them an opportunity. They give them a, you know, maybe a trial for a week or two just to see what sort of characteristics they present with. And, you know, these guys and girls are going in there and going, well, you know what, I don't actually want to sweep the floor. I actually want to go straight away and do, you know, job X, Y, and Z that, one, requires the skill and training that they don't necessarily have yet, and two, is usually a, you know, a job that's given to somebody in a superior position within that role. So, you know, we've got, I think, just anecdotally, and you would know more about it than I do, but it sounds like the employers are starting to vocalize this a bit as well, is that people are starting to go, you know what, I don't want to work, I don't want to build myself up from the ground up. I want to start, you know, where I want to start. And as you and I know, it's just not practical for an employer to do that. But also, it's just not the reality of how the system works, right?
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. And I look back at my beginning was a kitchen hand, and worked my way up to there from a waitress to the bartending and room service and bits and pieces in a hotel. The candidates that are youth at the moment, I'm finding they don't want to sweep the floor. They want to have a hands-on role, but they need to realise you need to start from the bottom and work your way up.
What do you think some of the mistakes are that people make when they start looking for work? I mean, this is obviously a key one in that they try and, you know, run before they can walk. But is there any key mistakes that you see people making as they're applying for jobs recently?
Absolutely. So a common trend that I'm finding is people do not do cover letters as much as maybe what they used to. And I find if you've tailored a cover letter to the employer, there's more likelihood that you will get an interview than just going ahead with a resume. Another thing could be knowledge around the business that you're going to approach. So let's just say you're going into a company face-to-face, then know about the business. What do they do there? What are their peak times? For example, if it was hospitality as a barista, you would be going in, banging it in the morning because they are flat out. They probably don't have that time to talk to you.
That's fantastic advice. I've never actually thought about that. And, you know, that makes perfect sense. If you've got somebody, like if I'm a business owner and I'm, you know, absolutely working flat chat at a restaurant at like peak dinner time, maybe 7 p.m. or something like that on a Friday night, and you're rolling in there with a resume just to be seen, I would predict that if it was me, I'd probably go, sorry, mate, do you mind coming back another time? And it's interesting. I reckon there must be quite a few people that still go ahead anyway, just through not having that insight, hey?
Absolutely. And I mean, you wouldn't walk onto a construction site and put a resume forward because there's work health and safety issues there. So it's how you're applying for the job as well. Some people will need to use keywords in their resume, because some service and software will filter those keywords to find the right suitable client.
Speaking of resumes, tell us a little bit about how somebody can supercharge their resume. We all hear at school the pros and cons of a resume, or what the teachers think make up a good resume. Somebody in your position obviously is dealing with resumes quite frequently. You know what makes a good resume. What can people do if they're trying to put across a really good first impression on that document?
Absolutely. So, I mean, everyone will have their own opinion about resumes and how to do them. And, I mean, each to their own. I would suggest that the resume is quite specific, simple, professional, easy to read. So we want a really nice template, 2 pages maximum, something really clean and tidy using bullet points and keywords. I like to personally use a objective or a career summary, especially for those people that might be changing industries. So they can justify they might have been a labourer their whole life, but they're going to go into something completely different in baggage handling. So they need to justify why they are moving, why they're looking for a new industry.
Got you. Now, correct me if I'm wrong with this one. I had a thought regarding resumes, and it might have been a thought that I read somewhere or somebody told me about. I actually have no idea where I got this information from, but I'm curious to hear your opinion on it. You know, when on a resume you're listing or sometimes listing your key attributes. So, you know, we always talk about good communication, you know, highly organized. You know, I don't know what they call them on resumes. Maybe it's personal attributes or, you know, something like that, that there's a heading and then people list these things. Now, to me, if I was an employer and I picked up that particular section I'm reading, it's like, okay, you're telling me you're, you know, highly organized. You're telling me you're a great communicator. You know, you're telling me that you're a problem solver. But, you know, there's no example at all that you are showing that you are actually those things. Like, you're just telling me that you're those things. And, like, obviously it's then for me to go, oh, well, I'll give you a trial run so that, you know, you can show me that you have those things. But I think, I'm just wondering, for me, if I was to write a resume, I would actually be listing examples of when I have been those things. So, for example, if I'm saying I'm a fantastic problem solver on my resume, I'd be wanting to put an example of where I've actually been a problem solver. What problem have I actually solved so that an employer can see evidence of, oh, yep, he can actually, this person has actually solved the problem, or at least he's given, you know, an example where he's proven what he's saying that he can do. Is that something that is encouraged, or do employers not want to see sort of extended sections in that area, or what's your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. I'm finding actually skill set, as maybe the word you were looking for, is actually quite removed these days. In a resume that I would suggest for someone to do would have their name and their personal details, such as email and phone number at the top of their resume, followed by a career summary. I'm a hardworking, loyal and independent individual seeking to obtain a role within the community service industry in which I can provide my employer with loyalty and excellent work ethic. And then after that, I would put something in regards to education and qualifications. I found on a old school resume, people would put their qualifications at the end of their resume. And I'm finding that employers have a 5-second window to look at the resume to impress, the person to impress. And if it's not at the top of their resume, the second page goes missing. It's gone. They miss that 7 years as a university degree that they've got. So I suggest people put that at the top. After that, we'd put your employment history, and the most relevant at the top would be your most recent history or the job that you're going for. So it's where your eyes dragged.
Now, you mentioned cover letters before. Can you just give me a little bit of clarification? What is a cover letter? Is that just a statement of why you want to work at the place that you're applying for? And does that get stapled to the front of a resume document? Is that how a cover letter works?
Yeah, so a cover letter would have a little bit of description about yourself, what you've done before, the job that you're going for. So, for example, you would be addressing it to the business that you're applying for on your left-hand side, and on the right side of the Word document, you'd put your personal details. In government jobs, I'll have a reference number as well to pop that on the document. And it's kind of like a little summary of what you've done before.
Now, when it comes to the opposite, you've given some awesome tips for building a great resume. I might even have to go and sort of update mine after having this conversation with you, because mine's probably very outdated and maybe, as you say, a little bit old school. But I was just talking to another guy who is in charge of looking at resumes for a different organization. And he looks at resumes, and I asked him, hey, what's one of the big turnoffs for employers on resumes? And for him, it was quite simply unprofessional lingo or unprofessional language used in the resume. So, for example, and I don't know how professional this is, but he actually showed me one of these resumes, and on the resume it said, you know, I'm good on the tools, you know, and it was like, if I was an employer, I just think, you know, that is kind of funny. Like, I almost just want to give him a trial run because it's kind of amusing. But at the same time, like, who is this person? Like, are they a larrikin? Are they going to be a larrikin on the job site? Or, you know, are they actually going to be good on the tools? So I feel like there has to be some professional language at least used in a resume
What other mistakes do people make other than language and how they write on resumes?
Absolutely. So I've got quite a few things that I could mention here. And something I see often is people using organization in their resume is the word, with a Z. There's so many of them and I see them daily, making sure that there is no spelling errors and it's been proofread. And also a lot of people not writing down that they have referees or otherwise there's referees on request. A lot of people don't have those referees when they're on request. So it does look really appealing to an employer if they've got the referees or even a labour hire will require them. Another thing that I often see is people don't update their mobile numbers on their resume. When they lose their phone or their phone's been stolen or it's broken, and an employer can't get in contact with you if there's no phone number. An email, once again, could be an issue if they've been logged out of their account. Another issue that I find in some resumes is it's not tailored to the position. So someone might write in their objective they're seeking to attain a labouring role, but they might be going for a administration and they don't update it. Once again, it comes back to proofreading.
It makes sense to me. It's kind of like that old thing of, you know, print off 50 resumes that are the same and drop them off to as many places as possible. I just think that that's maybe a little bit too old school or something of the past, where nowadays, you know, personalization of the resume is so important. And I know this just from when I've applied for certain positions. You know, even when what's interesting in certain roles that I've had before is you know what the position is. Like, you might already be working in that industry and you're applying for another role within that industry and you still need to make an even more specialized. So you're actually like specializing within the specialization for some roles. So I think the more specific a resume can be and getting into the habit of doing that is just so important. Apart from
one more,
a really good resume. Oh, there's one more. You go. What's the one more?
One more thing I'd like to mention that I suggest people take off their resumes is actually their date of birth. And depending on the employer at the time, they might be seeking someone of youth. They could be seeking a middle-aged person or they could be seeking a mature age. An example of that would be a younger person might be on their phone all the time, not reliable. They'd more prefer a mature age person because they are going to turn up and they are reliable. Or it could swing around the other way and it could their person might say that they like a younger person because they're fit and healthy. They don't want a mature age because there could be medical issues. And same with the middle age. They've got kids or maybe it's the perfect age bracket for the employer. So we just suggest that people take that off.
Apart from having a amazing resume that you can hand to employers, what are some things that people can do right now to make themselves more desirable when it comes to seeking and gaining employment?
Sure. So definitely researching the business that you're going to approach if you were going in person. And once again, as I mentioned before, is find out when their peak times are within the business. It's probably not a good time to go in at their peak service. Good to know a little bit about the business and also how you're presenting as well. If you're going to approach them wearing something really clean and tidy, slacks, a skirt that fits with the business, of course. If it's a trade, you know, maybe just some chinos and a dress top would be suitable. Also, to increase chances, a cover letter and an up-to-date resume.
You know, I have to laugh a little bit just reflecting back on my early years as, you know, like a young guy trying to get work, I guess, when you're in your teenage years. And, you know, God bless my mother. She's just such a great mum. But, you know, her advice was, again, from a different era. And I remember really clearly, you know, she would make me dress up in like a suit, you know, a full like black suit with a tie and all this sort of stuff. And she would make me wear that, you know, going into to all sorts of different establishments. And just what you said there, like I just come to think of it, like just it would have made such a huge difference if I'd just worn something more suitable to the profession. Like if I'm going to work in a cafe, like something kind of relaxed but smart, you know, if I was going to go and work for like a sign writing company, as you say, maybe some chinos and just like, you know, maybe a tucked in shirt, no tie, but like, you know, just making it more suitable. Whereas I sort of wore a suit to literally for everything from restaurants to Coles supermarkets. So it somehow worked though back then, but I don't know if it worked because of the suit, or maybe they just thought that I was putting so much effort into to looking the part that you know, I would have to put in so much effort into actually working at their place. So I ended up getting those jobs, but I very much doubt if I rolled into rolled in with a suit these days as a grown man that the reception would be quite as good.
I think it'll depend on the employer, but yes.
Interviews. Let's talk about interviews. These are things that scare the hell out of people. People get nervous. People get concerned. Here's an interesting question that got asked to a friend of mine on an interview. They were doing the interview and they were just going through the questions, all the standard things that you would expect and sort of expect. And then just out of the blue, like without warning, an employer said, "How many light bulbs are in the room?" And, you know, it was designed to catch this person out and how they would, I guess, respond to something a little bit left of field, how they would deal with, you know, something on the spot, how they handle pressure. And I thought it was a fantastic interview question just to throw in there at the drop of a hat. But interestingly, apparently, and I don't know if this is true, but apparently this is actually a question that does get asked for some high-profile positions. They randomly throw a question in there and see how you deal with it. And his response was absolutely brilliant. He looked up and he had a little bit of a look in the room. He didn't start counting the light bulbs. No, 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 that would be too simple. He looked up very briefly and said, "There is no light bulbs in the room. They're all fluorescent tubes." And apparently the employer just loved, like they all just looked at each other and just really enjoyed that response. So something so simple. There you go. What about people preparing for interviews? I mean, how can people get, I mean, maybe they can't prepare for, you know, left of field questions like that, so to speak, but what are some things that people can do to kind of, I guess, become more confident when they go into these interviews?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, a lot of people don't realize, but you could just head into Google and just search some interview questions that are commonly asked, and this prepares you for, you know, if it is a formal interview or if it is an interview panel, how to answer these questions, especially behavioural questions. And I'm sure everyone has experience before. Name a time you've been in a sticky situation and how you got yourself out of it. Very common. So being prepared for those type of questions that will come along. Also body language, smiling, eye contact. So making sure if you're sitting down in a chair, you're not crunched over, you're sitting high, smile, eye contact, and just try to relax. I mean, you're there for a bit of a chat. They want the right character trait. They want someone that's adaptable, not someone that is stressed. And also just mentioning what you could bring to the company. What do you know about the company as well, if they ask?
I think that last one is super important. Like researching the company before you go in and have that interview seems just like such a wise thing to do. Like the more you know about that company, the more you can kind of surprise them with that knowledge. I think it's fantastic. What about taking a pause? Like, is it okay if you're asked an interview question to take a short pause before responding? And like, how long is too long? Like, if you're sitting there for like 20 seconds, I guess people are going to find that a little bit too long. Is there like a happy medium, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I think pausing is completely fine to have a little bit of a think about it. 20 seconds is probably a little bit extreme. Things could get a little bit awkward between you and the person or persons. But if you're just keeping it a couple of seconds just to have a bit of a think, or using the while you're thinking about it, then I think that's suitable.
Yeah, okay. So that's interesting that like the ums and the ahs are acceptable too, because it's kind of like the I feel like you don't want to use too much though, right? Because there was a study that I was looking at a few weeks ago because it was just relating to the podcasting stuff. And apparently, like, people don't like listening to podcasts if there's lots of ums in it. And so a lot of podcasts will go through and edit all the ums out because of the frustration that it causes some of the listeners. So interesting. A little psychological cues, hey? So I guess from those interview tips, what are some of the big mistakes that people make? I mean, obviously coming from what you said, eye contact's a big one when it comes to interviews. Is there any sort of big mistakes that you see and or hear people make when it comes to interview time?
Yeah. So not turning up to interview on time, it's very embarrassing, really bad organisation, time management straight away. So you'll be instantly on the bad foot. Also, what you're wearing on the day. If you're going to a gym interview, for example, you do not wear gym gear. Wear interview wear. It is a formal setting. And also, talking negatively about your past employer or ex-employer is a no-no. We do not want to bring any negativity up as much as we can, or positive.
That makes sense. I feel like there would be a few people that maybe in an interview would, sort of badmouth that previous employer, and like quite often maybe they were let off for a reason, and, you know, they're kind of using that as a bit of fire to get back at their employer. But, yeah, I could see if I was somebody interviewing, it would be a bit of a red light for sure, because there's no guarantee that they're not going to do the same thing in the new position, right?
Yeah. You just never know if the person that's interviewing you is friends with Joe Blogs that runs the business that you just left. You just try to avoid it at all costs. Just say things didn't work out.
100%. So I'm really interested in, I guess, an area of employment that isn't spoken about a whole heap. And for me, I just think that, you know, what we're talking about, everything that we've mentioned, for a lot of people that have typical education and middle-class backgrounds, that have a little bit of parental support, that have good friendship networks and maybe even a base level of networking available to them, I think that there are also a group of people out there in the community that are looking for work that are perhaps disadvantaged in some of these areas. And some of those areas might also include, having finance, having enough money, for example, to go and buy a reasonable, presentable outfit. And I guess we're getting into, you know, the cycle of things that lead to things like poverty and all of these things. But, you know, what can people do that maybe are thinking to themselves, well, that's all well and good. I'm really out there genuinely looking for work, but, you know, I've just got these old clothes that, you know, aren't suitable for the job, or like I'm just going to struggle to get there in terms of petrol or getting the petrol money together to get to the interview. Or I guess, is there any, I mean, you must see these people frequently throughout your career. What sort of supports are in place for these people that are looking for work that are disadvantaged in some of these areas?
Yeah, absolutely. So the people that I am dealing with at the moment are on Centrelink benefits. They may need a little bit of extra assistance, and that's fine. So we can assist people with interview wear. We can also assist people with petrol. Maybe they might need their car fixed. They might need some registration for their car. Maybe they need some new teeth. Then we can help with that as well. I mean, by case-by-case scenario, if they attend their appointments and they seem really job ready and, you know, it swings in roundabouts, they give a little bit to us and we'll give that back to return to make them successful.
It's just given me another thought around those with disabilities as well. Is there any system or program in place that can assist those with disabilities finding work?
Yeah, absolutely there is. There is a thing called DES, Disability Providers. The company that I work for do not have disability in particular. We are Workforce Australia. However, they could go to Centrelink and register for DES payments and see if they're eligible to get assistance. I believe those people could do 7 to 9 hours roughly per week with an employer to reach their requirements.
I must say, I remember one particular workplace that I worked in, and they were really, really good at hiring certain people with disabilities. And those people just worked and worked so hard, and they were fantastic workers. And, you know, sometimes those disabilities, you know, they're just so grateful to be able to have work. And when they finally get it, they just throw their heart and soul behind it. And it's just amazing to watch, you know, some of these people just, you know, and feeling a sense of fulfillment, feeling like they're giving back to the community. I just think it's a really special thing to watch, to see, and to just be a part of helping those with disabilities, you know, move into the workplace. So that's really good, really nice to know, especially
absolutely.
For, I guess, that it is something that is happening. So that's awesome to hear.
Yeah. Even people that have come from a really rough background, they maybe no one in their family has worked before, and they are the black sheep of the family, and they've come to us for assistance. And it really, really is rewarding when you help that person with study and getting into their first job, an apprenticeship, or maybe getting their first car, and they can celebrate that with you. And it's just such a nice feeling to be able to help someone.
That's awesome, mate. And let's wrap it up there. Thanks so much, Avril, for your time. Absolutely amazing advice and expertise. As I said, I'm going to pop onto the Old Faithful laptop a little bit later tonight and maybe fine-tune some of you've given me some ideas for my own resumes. I really appreciate that. But also, more importantly, I think you've given some fantastic advice for people that are maybe thinking about going into work and giving them some really some practical tools to actually use to just give themselves that little competitive edge, because as we know, it is getting more competitive out there.
Absolutely. And thanks for having me.
You're more than welcome. If people want to employ your services or employ the services that we're talking about here in terms of employment services, where would you recommend they go? What can they do?
Absolutely. So as I'd mentioned, I work for a provider in Hobart. If someone would like to be connected with our services, they would need to go to Centrelink and see if they're eligible for a Centrelink payment with Workforce Australia. They'll then be sent to a provider, and I believe there's three in Hobart: Azoria, WorkSkills, and Max Employment. They work strictly in the Workforce Australia space, and they can hopefully be sent to one of our assistants.
Avril, thanks again for your time. Really appreciate it. Really appreciate you. Thanks again.
No worries. Thanks. Bye.
Well, there you go, crew. It's so important to have deliberate thought around the preparation required for any position that you wish to pursue. Otherwise, I really do think you're simply just leaving it to chance. You want to remove the element of chance. I mean, chance is going to come into it a little bit, but you want to remove as much of chance as possible by taking as much deliberate action as you can to present yourself in the best possible way. I feel that without deliberate action to improve the presentation of you as a person, both on paper and in person, of course, the employment ambitions you have will unfortunately and most probably likely fall on deaf ears. Crew, if you've got any questions around resumes or interviews, I'm certainly no expert, but feel free to shoot them through to @MrTMWalters on Instagram. And if I can't answer the question directly, I'll reconnect with Avril and see if there's something she can help with. As always, you can check out key insights from today's episode on Instagram @MistakeMastery. And of course, if you haven't subscribed to the show yet on your favorite channel, be sure to do so that you don't miss out on upcoming episodes and insights. On a side note, crew, I've been working on improving the quality of each episode in terms of the audio and particularly the visual component for social media, and hopefully this will start showing through in future episodes over the next few months. I hope you enjoy that. In the meantime, crew, have a fantastic week, and we'll see you next time.